And welcome back to the Film Reel cast. This week, it's just myself and Kelly. So there's lots of pressure on you, Kel, to actually have some input.
I could struggle with that then. I'm not sure how successful this will be. I don't want to let you down, but I'm feeling the pressure.
Are you feeling the pressure? Because we're doing a film based in 1981, is that why?
Well, no, that's not why. It's just because if I don't say anything, you've got no one else to talk to, so I've got no one else to hide behind.
That's what it is. But welcome back, everyone. As usual, if you're a normal listener to this or a usual listener to this, that is going to contain a foul language. It might not actually, because Steve and Neil aren't here, but we are here, so probably will. And it's going to contain plot spoilers as well. So if you've not seen the film we're doing, which is 1981, The Cannonball Run, with a massive cast, it's on Amazon Prime at the moment. And if you've not seen this film, it is dated, but it's really, really good fun. It's really entertaining. And it was a choice on your side, Kels, wasn't it, to do this?
It was my other half's choice. He says it's a very good film and it's really funny and he could watch it over and over again. So I thought, why not?
So we're really going to put that to the test to see if that is true, aren't we?
I mean, I can say I disagree, but that's not surprising. I disagree with most things he says. So that's not a
Exactly.
shock.
But this time we're talking about the film. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes in. I already have a rough idea. When I watched this, and I was sadly born in 1974, so I remember when this film came out, and it absolutely blew me away because of the cars and the chases and stuff like that. And it was absolutely brilliant. And it was directed by Hal Needham and written by Brock Yates. And Hal Needham has actually taken part in the Cannonball Run. And he took part in the ambulance Burt Reynolds actually drives.
In the real Cannonball Run.
In the real Cannonball Run, he took part.
Ah.
He did it, I think it was his girlfriend that was the passenger that actually got a nurse. And he used this ambulance, the actual vehicle, in this film. And it's exact setup. It's a real nod to what he did in real life, which is, I think, is really cool.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. I think that's quite cool.
It is indeed. And the cast in this is just absolutely huge. You've got Burt Reynolds, who by this time in 1981 did Smokey and the Bandit 1 and 2. And I suppose those films, do they mean anything to you, Kel?
I've heard the names.
Yeah, they're kind of entertaining, not too bad. Redneck kind of comedies, driving
Okay.
around. They made the Pontiac Trans Am a really cool car to have.
Well,
And
is that why he mentions that in this film?
he does indeed, which is a really good nod to this when he says we could use a Trans Am, and he virtually breaks the
Right.
fourth wall and kind of looks at the camera and says, well, that's been done before.
Yep.
And he said that he didn't want to do another film where he drives over 35 miles an hour because he was sick off the back of Smokey and the Bandit. But when they offered him $5 million to do this film, he said it's a crime not to take the money, and it's a crime not to want the money. So he actually took it, and yeah, 5 million back in 1981. It's insane, isn't it?
That's incredible, but what would you do for 5 million? What would make it worth it? Or would you literally just roll over and do anything?
Anything. 100,000, I'd do anything. Really don't care.
Blimey, that's a cheap bar to set. That's dangerous.
Well, I don't know anyone for 100,000, but I would. It'll pay my mortgage off. I really don't care. I have no morals or conscience. And yeah, 100 grand. I could easily do that. Really not a problem. So anyone out there listening to this has 100
Yeah.
grand. Email thefilmreelcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well. And show me the money, as they say.
That is a dangerous thing to ask for, but I would be interested in knowing what suggestions we get.
You're just a sick person with a sick mind. That's why.
Now, what's wrong with that? You seem to enjoy
You're thinking BDSM, me
it.
tied up and getting whipped.
That could
Saying,
be
show me the
enjoyable,
money.
yeah.
I just pray you
That
don't have
could
a
be
hundred grand.
enjoyable.
But we've also got Roger Moore, who plays Seymour. And this was in the middle of the Roger Moore fame playing James Bond 007, which is such a massive nod. He wasn't allowed to reference 007 in this film, but there's so many nods driving a silver classic Aston Martin. And
How
just.
do they play? Sorry, go on.
Now, go on.
If they can't mention it, how do they get away with playing the theme tune?
The theme tune, sing the theme
The
tune. I
theme
don't know.
tune.
And it was
Do they do
afterwards,
that?
Yeah, it was a massive discussion afterwards, and I had massive disagreements and falling outs with the guy who did James Bond. I can't remember his name, someone like Albert Broccoli, but it isn't like that. It's very close to it, and people listening to this
Albert
people listening to this again, it's so wrong, but it's something like that.
Broccoli.
I'm not a massive
Okay.
Bond fan, but
Clearly.
no, but it's got Farrah Fawcett. An absolute dream back in the 80s. She had a famous poster. It sold 6 million copies in the first year. And she was like a pin-up. She was in Playboy. Absolutely beautiful. And Charlie's Angels, I think, in the first season of the TV series. And yeah, she's just so feminine, isn't she?
She is very pretty. She's very simply pretty. She doesn't have to do a lot. She's, yeah, lovely.
Yeah, she's really, really nice. And you've got Dom DeLuise, who plays Victor or Captain Chaos, an interesting character who we will talk about, no doubt, in a lot more detail. It's got Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. in. And it's got the very, very lovely, back in the 80s, she was a huge crush of mine, Adrienne Barbeau, who plays Marcy, who drives the, I think it's a black Lamborghini Countach. That it's an amazing car. It's so sexy. I had a picture when I was younger of a white Lamborghini on my wall, and it's like parked under something like San Francisco Bridge, and it just looked fucking amazing. So those cars are just beautiful, aren't they?
So you didn't have a picture of Farrah Fawcett on your wall, but you had a picture of a car.
A Lamborghini. There's a massive difference.
Lamborghini is a what now?
It's a lovely car.
It's
I couldn't have had a picture of Farrah Fawcett with her nipples rock hard when I was about eight on my wall. I don't think it would have been appropriate.
No, okay, maybe not at eight, but.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're not parenting. I hate to think what your kids' room will look like.
I'd be totally appropriate, thank you.
Yeah, right, okay. And it's also had Jackie Chan in for his first kind of US film debut. And this was the first time they used after credits. And this was something that Jackie Chan took on all of his films. And when you watch, and we've done those films, and he did the Rush Hour films, they have the after credit scenes. And in those after credit scenes, he references, I've done it before and I learned it from Cannonball Run. So it's a kind of a nod to that. And you've got Peter Fonda in there as well. I don't know if he's any relation to Jane Fonda, but you probably wouldn't. Would you know who Jane Fonda is?
Not a clue, never even heard the name.
You're joking. Seriously, you've not heard of Jane Fonda.
Should I have?
Yeah, she's quite a famous actress, yeah.
Let me Google her and I'll see
And you've
if I
got George
recognize her.
Firth, who plays AJ Foyt, who's uses has a couple of funny lines that did remind me. Of if you've ever seen Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and when Chevy Chase is looking at underwear to buy for his wife, and the lady who's selling it is extremely attractive, and he starts talking about it's quite nipply outside because this girl's really attractive, and he drops the same lines in. It's just so, so funny. But it's just an absolutely huge cast. And when you looked at the making of this, it got really slated. We're trying to find ideas, and it was suggested that this was just a holiday for all the stars to have a big piss up and get paid ridiculous money. The film was empty of any content, and it was just cars. But when it came out, I think it was only beaten by Superman 2, because obviously the first one was such a huge success, Richard Donner, and then it was Cannonball Run, and then it was Raiders of the Lost Ark. So this film did make a huge profit. On, I think it might have been a 15 million budget. I don't have all the facts in front of me. But you've looked at the actual Cannonball Run of what that's all about, haven't you?
I have. I wanted to, because I didn't realise it was an actual thing until I watched the film. And yeah, it's quite impressive. It goes just over 2,900 miles across America, New York to LA. And it started off when they did it in 1915. It took over 271 hours. And
Blimey.
then it's got down in 2020, so I guess it's like the current record of it is
Yeah.
25 hours.
25 hours. I'd love to know
Yeah.
the average speed of that. If I could do maths, I could
113
work it out.
miles an hour average.
Blimey, that's average. That's
That's average.
insane, isn't it?
And that was done in an Audi S6, I think.
Blimey, an Audi S6, very nice. Not even a Honda Jazz, no.
No. None of them were done in a Honda Jazz, I'm afraid, especially with the dehumidifiers take to the dash.
Nothing wrong with that. I should have done it. I should try it next time, honestly. But the budget for this film was 18 million. It made 72 million worldwide. So, again, it's a massive success. But there were films like this before that and around. And I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know why I say this to you. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm putting money on you haven't seen it. Death Race 2000. Have you seen that?
Not even heard of it.
You had films like Death Race 2000, starring David Carradine as Frankenstein, which was a race kind of obviously set in the future, 2000, where you race across the country. It's got Sylvester Stallone in as well, and you kill members of the public and you score points. It was quite controversial at the time. But yeah, Death Race 2000. And then David Carradine did another film. And again, I'm trying to remember this because I didn't do much research, called Cannonball. And that's set in the future. And that's a racing film. And then you had the film Gumball Rally as well. But this film on Gumball Rally is set to the idea of the Wacky Races with Dick Dastardly and the Anthill Mob. Have you watched that cartoon?
I do know Dick Doss. Yeah,
Okay.
I have.
Okay, for all these iconic films, you get to Dick
The
Dastardly and suddenly a light bulb
cartoon.
moment happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were kind of referencing those films. There have been quite a lot of films like this since, but I think what makes this film so unique, and again, it's for the wrong ideas, that set in 1981, obviously there wasn't any kind of PC correct whatsoever, and people just said what they wanted to say, and everything was acceptable. But there's so much overt and underlying racism in this film, isn't there?
There, you say racism. Yes, on today's scale of things, it would be called racism because someone's feelings would be hurt. But none of it is said in a derogatory way, so it's not really racism. It's just a joke.
No, and I think because we're so entrenched in what we can say and what we used to say, even the nursery rhymes and stuff like that, a lot of them you can't
Yeah.
say in school, like "bar bar black sheep" and stuff like that. It just goes to an extreme. But when you see Jackie Chan, they play the kind of Chinese theme tune, like ding 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 ding, every time you see them. And I know it's a trope of the Chinese. And is it Burt Reynolds called Sammy Davis Jr.? Is it the Chocolate Monk? And it's obviously said in jest, and he does laugh, but you just can't say things like that. It's just
No.
talking about someone, obviously, for their color. So it's you. Times have moved on, and you don't say things like that. But Burt Reynolds was so against this film, and I watched interviews on YouTube today of Smokey and the Bandit and two. When he was talking about how adamant he was this is his last film and how much he wanted to go into serious acting. And this film before Steve McQueen sadly died, they wanted Steve McQueen to star in Cannonball Run, and it was going to be a really serious, gritty film. And after he died, they went for Burt Reynolds and thought, let's just do a really stupid film. So I think that says a lot of what they think of Burt Reynolds, really.
What, because he was the second
Second choice, and when
choice.
they went for let's have a stupid film that isn't serious whatsoever. Oh, Burt Reynolds is really good at that.
Yeah, I don't know that that is a good thing to have under your belt, but yeah, it got him 5 million. So if someone wants to throw that my way for that reason, I'm happy with that.
Exactly. And let's look at some things. And I do like looking at this, some facts about this film from the internet, just to see if they are facts or if they are fiction. Just from other people have posted this, and some of them are just like, it's not even a fact, it's just bollocks. But Jackie Chan, who played a small role in this movie, was very upset when he learned his character was Japanese, especially since he is Chinese. So why would they do that? It doesn't make sense, does it?
Yeah, but is yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. But why also, if you're playing a character, surely you would know as well what it is before it starts. So if you don't like it, you'd say.
Maybe they told him in English he just could understand English. I don't know. Who
Well, he
knows?
doesn't understand English, does he? He can't talk it. He learns it phonetically, supposedly. If he has to speak English, he learns the sounds, but he doesn't know what he's saying.
Does he?
Well, apparently so, yeah.
Is that an IMDb fact,
He
or is
doesn't
that?
speak, well, I'm sure his English is better than my Chinese, but
Oh, you're so
yeah, he doesn't
modest.
speak. He doesn't speak English. He just learns the words by their sound.
Right, I've never heard that before, but
I know
I'm
by the
not doubting
silence
that.
you quite clearly don't believe me, and you're probably going to Google
No, I'm going to leave that out there. I'm going to leave it where it is. So,
that. I'll Google it for you.
but at the end of the movie, the big
Let's have a
race, when they're actually
look-see.
running down the side of the dock, you do see someone wearing the Smokey and the Bandit black jacket that Burt Reynolds wore in Smokey and the Bandit Rides Again, which was in 1980. So I quite like those little nods. And the short sequence at the beginning of the film involving two animated car wrecks, the 20th Century Fox logo, was created by Hal Needham, who did a similar one for the Universal Pictures Smokey and the Bandit, and it was his kind of trademark at the time. And Burt Reynolds said, "I did this movie because I did it for the wrong reasons. I never liked it. I did it to help out a friend of mine, being Hal Needham. And I also felt it was immoral to turn down that kind of money. I suppose I sold myself out, but I couldn't really object to doing it." So, I mean, that it kind of shows his morals and conscience really there, doesn't it? But I know it's 5 million, so I'm fully back in for doing it.
Yeah, I guess everyone has a price, everyone has a limit, don't they? Where you forget all your morals and your conscience and you think it's worth it for
Yeah, and understandably, I remember you said that the bulk of these movie
that.
stars only work for 2 or 3 days. And when you think how many stars there are, how difficult it would be with egos to get all of these stars together now. It would be so difficult if you had like Brad Pitt and then like Tom Hanks and like the legendary Tom Cruise. It would be so
The
difficult to
legendary
get
Tom
so many
Cruise.
egos together. And they'll be like, "I want to be the star. I want to win this."
If
You
they were all
would.
like Tom Cruise, yeah, because he's a bit of a twat. But not everyone's like that. Some people are nice and normal.
But it goes back, even I think, I don't know when it is. I'm going to put a date there now, maybe 1984, when they were singing "Do They Know It's Christmas." The amount of arguments they had for who's going to sing the famous line that Bono sings, because all
Oh,
of these
really?
egos wanted to sing that line because it's just so iconic. And I can imagine it'll be exactly the same thing when all of these stars get together, that they want to drive the best car, they want to do certain things. And yeah, it would have been really interesting. But I did look at behind the scenes, but there was no mention of kind of egos. It seems like everyone was either on drugs or they were just alcoholics.
What do you, I thought when they show you at the end of it, because obviously they put the outtakes at the end. I was looking at it and I was wondering if half of them were pissed whilst they were doing it. Because some of the mistakes that they make and that they laugh at, it's just like, are you drunk? Are you
Yeah.
just inept? What's going I mean, it's funny, but it's like, really?
Yeah.
How did you get there?
It's weird, isn't it? And the Ferrari 308 used in the car, I think that's the one by Dean Martin, belongs to Hal Needham as well. So he's a proper petrol head.
There you go.
And the vehicle's used in there, and I was right, it is a Lamborghini Countach LP400S. That's the car that even now, that's just so iconic. That car is just, oh God, it's beautiful.
Okay.
So, and the Aston Martin 1964 DB5, driven by Roger Moore, is the same Aston Martin used in Goldfinger 1964, driven by Sean Connery.
So,
So,
Aston Martin or Ferrari?
you're going to go Aston Martin all day long, I would.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Apparently, not that I've ever got one or I'll ever have one, unless I've got like a car cleaning job and I'm actually sat in one.
Or
But
someone gives
apparently,
you 5 million for doing something outrageous.
exactly. Please bring it
Yeah.
on. thefilmrealcast@gmail.com. That they're not meant to be that good inside, having like the mod
Oh.
cons back in the day. And that's why Lamborghini brought cars out, because they thought, "I could do a better version of this for the money you're paying." And Lamborghini actually did what they did. So, but I would have an Aston Martin all day. So, and that car, they purchased that car in 1980s, or someone purchased that car for $250,000 in 1986. So it's just a lovely car. It's so iconic, especially with like the bulletproof shield coming up at the back in the James Bond film. It's Just absolutely brilliant. But the start of this film is brilliant. When you see that Lamborghini and you've got the car chase, and the fact that all the cars, the police cars, are driving Transams, and the way this Lamborghini is toying with this police car, and the noise of this car is incredible, isn't it?
It does sound very lovely. Yeah, it is a sexy sounding car. Yes.
But when it overtakes, when it they're trying to look for the Lamborghini, they don't know where it is, and you hear them on the radio, and it's a lovely straight piece of road. I mean, perfect for a Honda Jazz. And the Lamborghini, you're
Don't you
laughing.
need a bit of a descent so that you can pick up some speed in your jazz?
Yeah, I'd love to argue. I really would. But the fact that the Lamborghini just. That speed and that noise, it's just absolutely incredible. And I mean, oh God, I could talk about the Lamborghini all day and the noise. That's why I love Formula One. When you hear those cars, the power. And I was talking about that, if you listen to the Top Gun podcast, when you hear those planes, the jets, when it rips through you, it's just so impressive, isn't it?
When the yeah with the planes and the jets and stuff, I would agree with that. That's quite like an exhilarating feeling, I guess. But the cars don't give me the same vibrations, shall we say?
Why did you choose that? Why is that important to you? That
Well,
way you just go and wash machines all the
no, I'm not gonna say
time.
that. I just think from a plane, it's a lot more exciting. From a car, it's quite standard.
Wouldn't know. It doesn't affect me in the same way. But we're soon
But clearly
into.
does. You get very excited over the sound of the Ferrari.
The same way you do. That's obviously apparent. But we're soon introduced by Dom DeLuise, the Captain Chaos, when Burt Reynolds is doing up his car, he tries it out and crashes it.
What are you, some kind of nut? Who do you think you are? Dun, dun, dun! I am Captain Chaos. And this is my faithful companion, Kato.
And he gets out of the car with this red cape and this kind of mask on. And is he schizophrenic? What's this Captain Chaos about?
He's got to be, yeah, he's got to have some kind of split personality disorder of some kind, because he changes, he gets stronger, he gets quicker, he gets more intelligent. It's a whole different person just in his same stumpy little body.
So it's his, like, I know it's his alter ego, and he explains when he was getting bullied by nine people in the playground when he was younger that he couldn't do anything, and then Captain Chaos came out. But it's, do you think they take the piss out of possible schizophrenic or mental health, or where do you sit?
I don't think they're taking the piss out of mental health. I think they're flirting with the line of it to show that it could be funny, but I don't think they're necessarily pointing and laughing at it, no.
Now, I just wonder what your take was. And Roger Moore is introduced. He is so suave and sophisticated. He is James Bond. And as you said, how they kind of flirted with the line of 007 and Roger Moore, because he even talks about his character and his acting and being an assassin. And when he's talking to his mum about money and why he's wasting so much money on doing the race, and he comes across with that line as if he's going to kill his mum. And at the end of it, he says, "Oh, mum, the problem with you is you're too Jewish." And then that's just, oh my God, it's like, wow. I just couldn't believe when he said that. I was more shocked at that comment than it actually being a joke.
I thought it was brilliant though, because you know what they're getting at, and you just would not be allowed to say it now. You would never get away with that.
No, it's just unbelievable.
It's
But
fantastic.
it really is.
Where did I go wrong?
You know something, Mama? You're too Jewish.
The reason why they, being they, Burt Reynolds and his sidekick, Little fact, when they're actually in the ambulance driver who says that this can go so fast and get you through red lights and get you from A to B in this time, that's actually the director, Hal Needham, and he's referencing when he did this in the Cannonball Run. So it's a really good nod, you know?
Oh, what, so he's talking about his experience of doing it?
Yeah, and he plays the paramedic, so he's kind of gone back to when he took part in the Cannonball Run. And that's when they get the idea of using the ambulance, and that's when you get Burt Reynolds. This is a classic laugh that he does. You know, like Jimmy Carr does his stupid laugh when he inhales.
He laughs backwards.
Exactly, and Burt Reynolds is famous for this laugh. But we're introduced, the first kind of half an hour is being introduced to the characters. It goes from Burt Reynolds, and it goes to Jackie Chan, who is stereotypically full of gadgets, really high tech, but haven't got a clue. And then it goes to the Sheik, who's quite, it's so, if you want to kind of stereotypical, it's Jamie Farr who plays the Sheik. And he's a really funny actor, but it's just really stereotype, isn't it?
It is, with all the money and all the everything basically at his disposal. Yeah, it is. But he plays it well because he's so dismissive of it all. It's really good.
Yeah, and he's even called, I think at one time, they even call him a camel jockey.
They do.
Yeah. It's just, oh, it's so bad, isn't it? It really is bad. And when you see Brad, who's in the plane, the guy next to him, oh my God, he looks like a gorilla. His jawline, he's so freaky looking, isn't he? Do you see that when Brad's kind of being kind of briefed by his secretary and his advisor?
What, before he rides the bike out the back?
Yeah.
Yeah, his face is, oh, I don't know if you're allowed to say it, it does look like a monkey. The way his jawline and the top lip and everything come forward and so pronounced. He does look like a monkey.
He really does. It's just, it's strange because he's a really smart looking guy. He's got a suit on, tie on, waistcoat, but he just looks like an absolute freak. He's really strange. And he rides the bike right out of the back of the plane at this kind of air show. And it's just a really weird introduction. And then you've got the two rednecks who are just so stupid. One of them was in a previous film with Burt Reynolds, and he promised that if you do get another main role in a film, can you think of me? Can I be involved in that? And that's why he's in it. And these guys are back in the 80s were very, very famous at their craft. And I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but they only play a bit part in it. But it's when we're introduced to Farrah Fawcett, that's a really, really funny scene. And I really do like the fact that the guy who's kind of coming on to her, and it's that Mr. Foyt, that he does it in such a sleazy way that. And he uses that line nipple, doesn't he? And
he does.
It's brilliant. And you can later on in the film, you can totally understand the reason why, can't you?
You can, and it's very appropriate as it turns out. Yeah, but I just love the way he can't keep his eyes up.
No.
He's not even subtle. He is. There's not even an attempt really at looking at her in the eye.
Mr. Tits pervert, isn't it?
He's just a perv. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he just doesn't hide it. And when he's trying to make that speech about the environment, because she loves trees and she's a real hippie type, isn't she? That just loves the world. And you've got the rednecks in their car and they just blow the whole window. And that's when Mr. Foyt, as he's called, wants to get revenge on everyone. And I remember this scene as a youngster, and I thought it was just so, so funny. I was so young, I wasn't even bothered about Farrah Fawcett. It was all about the cars for me, which is pretty sad. But they're in the hotel, and that's when they meet. And it does make me laugh when Foyt's there, and because one of the cannonballers drives his truck through the window, that Foyt just collapses in his kind of this seat, and they see that Burt Reynolds is wearing his ambulance uniform, and they ask him to give him first aid, and he just doesn't give any fucks. And it's just so funny when he sprays the water at his face and bollocks. Just the lines he uses, he really doesn't give a shit.
I would have loved to have seen the outtakes of that bit where he's spraying him with water, because you can just imagine him getting carried away with it and just absolutely drowning him. It'd be really funny.
It's great. And when you look at people in the background, You can see a lot of them laughing in this, and that's what I like, because most of these people were so good at their craft, they just ad-libbed everything, and that was it. And it's the famous bar scene, and I call it famous for two particular reasons, when all the cannonballers are there. And it's weird that a lot of them don't know the other ones are cannonballers, do they? Like, when they go over, because they want, got the ambulance, but they want a doctor and they want a patient, and they go over to Adrian Barbeau, who's sitting down with her friend. Both of them are absolutely stunning looking, wearing cat suits, and they don't know they're cannonballers. It's weird, isn't it? And they don't even recognize Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., who are at the bar dressed as priests. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yes and no, because why would you necessarily know who is entering a race that's not started yet?
But if you saw two priests at a bar getting pissed, and the line that Dean Martin uses and that guy spits his drink out is absolutely brilliant.
Yes, okay, that it would look odd, and I suppose you could put two and two together. But you wouldn't necessarily, two women in cat suits in a bar, you wouldn't necessarily assume that they're driving a car for the cannonball one.
No, but Dean Martin is such a pervert, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But he doesn't care. He doesn't hide it. I suppose you've got to give him a little bit of credit because he's so blatant. He's not some sleaze who hides and just has a little bit of a peep show. He makes it quite obvious what he's doing, at least.
I'll remember that for my tactics. And if that's
no, of... that's not a good thing. I'm just saying it's better. It's just right. It's still not right, and still don't do that. But it's better than being a total creep that like cuts a hole out of the newspaper kind of thing.
Right, I won't do that. I prefer like my Kindle. I'm not going to cut a hole in that.
You're a villain.
Thank you. I am indeed. But in the bar. Burt Reynolds and Farrah Fawcett lock eyes. And Farrah Fawcett plays a character, Pamela, but he just calls her Beauty, and he calls her all sorts of things. And she's standing there at the bar, and oh my God, I mean, I was 7 years old when this film came out. And this clearly didn't mean anything to me when I was that age, because when I saw it now, it was fucking hell. You could cut glass with her nipples, couldn't you?
You definitely could. Yeah, she was either extremely aroused or very, very cold.
You got to go for one. Go for it.
What do I think she is? I imagine she's cold. I imagine they put like ice cubes on her nipples or something before they've taken that shot, because they are very round, very hard, and they don't leave much to the imagination.
They don't at all, and it's amazing. And she dated Fall Guy Lee Majors for a long time. I think they were married for a, you wouldn't mean anything to you, would it, Lee Majors, or the Fall Guy, would it? $6 Million Man?
I've heard of it. Does that count?
Nope. Not at all.
No, that means nothing to me.
There you go. But they did date after this for a while, after the film. So Burt Reynolds was a massive heartthrob back then. He was with like Sally Fielding, who was a mum in Forrest Gump. I mean, she was lovely. And yeah, he dated so many people. He was in lots of films with Dolly Parton, and they got it on as well. So, and he's famous also for wearing his funny wig. His hair never changed all through the years. He had a great wig.
So that's not a wig, surely, what he's got on in this, or what he has in this?
Yeah, that's a wig.
Is it?
Yeah.
Are you joking? I don't know if you're joking. I don't think you are.
Oh, he had a great wig, honestly. So his hair,
I genuinely don't know if you're joking or not.
But as he got older, in the late 80s, he had a wig and his hair never changed. Honestly, do some Googling on his hair. But this is 1981.
That's a little bit vain. That's a little bit vain, isn't it? Blokes just generally lose their hair, just grow old gracefully.
But you don't know, because you're in like the spotlight, aren't you? And you just can't do that. It's just not the dumb thing, is it? It's like females. Lots of women are kind of even more so put on a pedestal.
Women are worse.
Mm. Yeah.
Women are worse, but women typically wear makeup as a standard more than men anyway. Well, they used to. It's not quite such a divide anymore, but women, it was more acceptable to falsify your hair or your face or your eyes or your lips or your boobs. That was quite normal, but for a bloke to do it, that's, I would say, especially at that time, it was quite unusual. And he's not an ugly bloke. He's quite an attractive man. So yeah. Just do it gracefully and you'd look better. Otherwise, it looks like you're trying too hard.
No, I completely agree. He's a really good looking guy. He's got great smile. He's really, really good screen presence. And yeah, you can totally understand why he just bagged all of the ladies back then. Because yeah, he's a good guy. But his hair was, or his wig, did become quite a thing.
Okay, I'll believe you. Is his tash real?
Oh, yeah, his moustache is real, yeah.
Okay, that's okay then. Although he could do with getting rid of that, or at least growing a proper beard.
His moustache is like Tom Selleck, isn't it? It's famous for the moustache.
But again, Tom Selleck doesn't look bad without a tash. He still looks
weird.
Quite...
No, he looks so weird without a moustache.
No, disagree. He doesn't look bad without it. No, and if you're going to have it, you may as well have a full beard. Just, no.
So, and we're introduced when they get the doctor, and it's brilliant. We are introduced to the actor, Jack Elam, who plays Dr. Nicholas Van Helsing, who's a proctologist, who's an absolute filthy bastard. He's so weird looking, isn't he?
He's a proper freak. If he was your doctor and he came out looking like that, you would run a fucking mile. You wouldn't let him anywhere near you, especially with that fucking needle.
As you say, he walks around with a massive needle. And the fact that he's a proctologist, and by the nature of it, he's got a really long middle finger, isn't he? Which he sticks under Burt Reynolds' nose.
Yeah, he does. And then he squirts him with the whatever's in the needle thing, which is a little bit disturbing, to be honest.
And when he's introduced to people, they play that organ music that is like really horrific. And it's just so funny. Every time they do that, I fucking laugh because he's so rancid.
He reminds me of Uncle Fester from the Addams Family because he's not bald, but he's creepy looking. He's always got really weird facial expressions. And he's like death. You just don't want him anywhere near you. And he's supposed to be someone that you'd go to for help. It just seems a little bit ironic.
I don't know if I would. If I had fucking rectum problems, I honestly don't think I'd even go to this guy. Because all he wants to do is examine people, women, and touch them and drug them. It's weird. And the story gets even stranger because for some reason they want a patient, a female patient. They go past an accident where Foyt's had an accident and Farrah Fawcett's there. And they fucking kidnap her, don't they?
They don't kidnap her. She was willingly getting into the van. They just leave him behind and then it comes a little bit
I'd
creepy.
Say that's a massive blurry line of kidnapping.
I don't know.
Do they say to her, do you want to come with us on the Cannonball Run ride? Has she got a choice when she's actually in the van?
No.
There you go then. I'd say that's kidnapping. And then when she goes back and looks at what's happening in the back of the van, because there's curtains in there, and the doctor turns around, and the look on his face, the perfect specimen. It's just brilliant.
Doctor.
My God, the perfect specimen. JJ, you want me to start the examination right away? I'm going to like this job. Right here, honey.
No, thank you. Not right now.
And what makes me laugh is, as I said earlier, every time they show Jackie Chan, you get the stereotypical music. And you get Adrian Barbeau, who gets stopped with her friend in the Lamborghini. And every time they get stopped, they've got these kind of bright catsuits on, that they just unzip down and they just show a bit of boob. And the police officers all lap it up, don't they?
They do. They love it. There's a lot on show and it's worth looking at, to be fair to them. So why not? Yeah. If you've got it, flaunt it.
These are absolutely stunning. Really, really stunning. And the officer who first stops them is like the body double for Burt Reynolds, which is why he looks like him so much.
I did not know that, but he does also have a stupid tash, yeah.
It's not a stupid tash, it's iconic tash.
It's stupid.
Well, they're your words, not my words. But again, they try and convince Farrah Fawcett to be a passenger, to be a patient. And she just doesn't want to do it. And even the doctor, I swear at some point, he does actually sexually assault her. I really do. When they go into the toilets later on in the film, when he's like, I want to follow you in.
Yeah, that's, I don't understand that. Why would you ever let... No, I'm sorry. Why would you ever let anyone? You'd say you go first. Yeah, but you would say if he's that desperate or whatever, okay, fine, you need to go. I understand that. But then you go, okay, you go first, because there's still only going to be one toilet. If it's one cubicle, there's not going to be two shitters sat next to each other, is there? So let him go first.
I'd love to know what happened in that toilet. I really would.
I don't. That made me very uncomfortable. Because I do not understand the thought process that went into that at all.
No, because basically, what he says to her is so wrong, and she agrees to it, and it's really strange. But when we see Roger Moore driving, and every time we see him, he's got a different bit of a kind of woman by his side. And he's so sophisticated. He's ultimate silk. He really is. And he even references the famous ejector seat in the car. It's absolutely brilliant. And anyone who's a Bond fan or loves those Aston Martins would know the reference of the ejector seat. Because the toy I had when I was younger, I think it was the Matchbox toy, it was this Aston Martin. And you pressed a couple of buttons on the side and the bulletproof screen went up at the back. And he pressed another button and the roof opened. And there was a female wearing this white skirt, like a little plastic figure. And she flew out the top of the car. It's just absolutely iconic. And it will be. It's just timeless.
I mean, it's only timeless if people know what it's referencing.
It is indeed. And it's lost on you. But we do get
some... Hey, no, it wasn't. Thank you very much. I'm pretty confident it was.
Yes.
I mean, normally I'll take the abuse, but I actually knew what he was referencing there. Thank you very much. And you knew at the end when they get back in that car,
that wasn't
you
funny.
Knew that that was going to happen. So yeah. I knew what they were referencing. Thank you very much.
Okay, okay, still don't take it back. I don't understand, and I'm confused as to why Burt Reynolds, kind of a smart guy, and you've got Captain Chaos there next to him, why they fall so easy for Sammy Davis Jr. Priest. And Dean Martin, yeah, pulling them over and kind of letting their tyres down. It's just to gain an advantage. But it is brilliant when Dean Martin goes round to the side of the ambulance to bless them and he opens the door and sees Farrah Fawcett there and his line of, I really need to bless her.
I'm sure you do.
It's so funny. Mm-hmm. The doctor turns up and he's like, whoa. But Reynolds says, no, I think he needs blessing out of everyone. And he's kind of, fuck that. I'm not going near it.
No one wants to go near it. But I like the revenge that he gets on the priests. I think that's obviously stereotypical, but quite funny as well.
Yes, definitely. And Farrah Fawcett has been drugged at this point by the doctor.
Yeah, she has. Because she's basically unconscious, isn't she?
See, that's really concerning, isn't it?
I don't see why it's necessary. But I guess maybe that's what happened in the bathroom. Because you don't really... After they've gone into the bathroom, the next shot you see of her is where she's on the bed, barely conscious. So it leaves a whole big gap where you really don't want a big gap to be filled with your own imagination because it's not filled with good stuff.
No, it's a really bizarre thing to actually happen. But again, this is why things are so different. It's 1981, and you look at the Kurt Russell film with Goldie Hawn, Overboard, and that film is probably lost on you, or maybe not.
Yeah, no, you were right the first time.
But Kurt Russell, and I've spoken about this on a previous podcast, does work on Goldie Hawn's yacht. He's a carpenter. And he does loads of work and she refuses to pay. And she falls overboard, gets amnesia. And he tells her, no, you're my wife. I've lived with you all the time. And they enter a sexual relationship. And he gets her to do all of these chores and stuff like that. And again, it's a kid's film. It's a comedy because he's got really naughty, horrible, noxious children. And she wakes up one day and realises that, fuck, what the hell am I doing? And he's kind of kidnapped her, raped her. Because she's not consented to anything. And it's a really weird twist. It's something about the 80s that is just so fucked up.
I suppose if you couldn't get away with it, then you're never going to get away with it in a film, I suppose, because it's only getting more and more restricted. But that's a little bit weird and creepy if that's a kid's film, because
Yeah,
that's
overboard.
basically rape.
Yeah, and if it's ever on, you should watch it because it's strange. It's a really popular film, and if you don't delve deep into it and think about it on different levels, obviously like we do with a critical eye on the podcast, that you kind of think, oh, it's such a lovely film. It's a funny revenge film because he gets his own back on her. It's far more twisted and far deeper. But as you
Yeah.
say, when they leave the petrol station to get revenge, Burt Reynolds stops a policeman and really sets him up, doesn't he? It's such a classic line, using them as flashers.
I think it's brilliant. I enjoyed this bit because you kind of knew what he was going to say, but you couldn't really believe it. And I think it's brilliant. So stereotypical of priests and what they
Yeah.
could potentially be in the news for. It's brilliant.
I think it's funny because he says, get out of the car. And he says, right, hit the car. And they both start patting the car. And it's so stupid. But I love stupid comedy. And Dean Martin does that brilliantly with Sammy Davis Jr. It's so good. It's lost on them of how serious it is. But yeah, Sammy Davis Jr.'s
It's
face,
brilliant.
it's fucking priceless.
I
It
like it
really,
when he
really
gets
is.
called small as well. SM all.
Yeah, and that was a line that me and my friend used to say to each other at school after watching this film. It
Oh.
really stuck with me, and I hadn't seen this film for so long. And I was like, wow, it's from this film, and I remember it because, yeah,
Oh,
it was
that's cute.
Dean Martin. You've got the roadblocks with Foyt working with the police,
Yes.
stopping all the cannonball drivers, and I don't understand why the police are entertaining his need to get rid of them.
Well, no, I guess maybe only because he's trying to track down the blonde, Farrah Fawcett, whatever her name is, Pamela,
Yeah.
is it? Maybe he's trying to get, he said that she's been kidnapped by these people, so they put the roadblock in to stop everyone, because at that point he'll be able to get the ambulance.
Yes, I didn't think of that. That's not a bad idea. That's probably the reason why. I didn't know whether it was because of the fact he wanted to stop the race in total.
No.
But it's weird because Farrah Fawcett starts to get undressed in front of Burt Reynolds in the back of the ambulance, and she still is there against her will. And they haven't offered to let her go or explained really much about what's going on. And it's a really weird setup that is just never explained through the whole film. It's not like she gets Stockholm syndrome and has sympathy and starts falling in love with her kidnappers.
No, I don't know, because he comes in a vesty thing, doesn't he, as well, as if it's like so hot that they need to strip naked or something. I don't know,
Yeah.
it's weird, but the whole thing with her, like you say, being there, it's all a bit weird, it's all a bit uncomfortable, but just don't look into it too deep, and just it'll be fine.
Yeah, and one thing, good thing about the 80s and these kind of films, it was just boobs, wasn't it? And when the sheik goes to order food, and that waitress comes out, and she just bends over, and he goes for his order, and then quotes two milks when he looks at her
Yeah.
boobs.
He comes back and pays her a whole wad of cash as well. It's like, yeah, I'll be back. That's
To
like, just wait,
join his
kind of thing.
harem.
Yeah, it's
I mean, she
brilliant.
is built very well, I have to say.
Is she, what do you mean by that?
She has
Built very well.
amazing, voluptuous figure. She really does.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say the nice way.
Yeah, that was put very politely for you, which is a surprise, if I'm entirely honest.
Thank you. I'll take that. I really will. And when, I don't know whether they kind of did this for a soft moment, because you've had the comedy, you've had the action. When she's sitting at the front of the ambulance with Dom DeLuise at Victor Prism, who's Captain Chaos, they have that kind of soft moment where he talks about why he, as we spoke about earlier, why he kind of turned into Captain Chaos. Do you think that's really needed in this film or not
No,
really?
I think it's trying to give the characters a little bit of depth, isn't it? And to try and understand why he is the way he is, but you don't really need to, because the film isn't like that. It's not an in-depth feeling film. It's just straight up more slapstick comedy.
Yeah, no, I completely
It's
agree.
out of place.
Yeah, and it's annoying that I have to agree with you, but I do. It was, if you're going to do that, no, you just don't need this film. It isn't deep in any way, is it? So it
No,
doesn't
it's
need
not.
a deep, touching moment because it's never really explained even then. He kind of says it's his alter ego, but you kind of guess that, but you don't really give a shit at the time because no one takes Captain Chaos serious at all. And it's a very, very strange choice. But one person who I was really pleased to see and I forgot was in this, if you're a child of the 70s and you love the 80s, when the two ladies get pulled over in the Lamborghini, and again, they're sitting there, they unzip their tops, and you've got Miss Tessmacher, who is Lex Luthor's bit on the side. She's absolutely stunning. She really is. And she's got a cracking figure as well, really feminine figure. And she turns up, kind of boobs out as well, when she's a police officer. Mm-hmm. And the look on the two ladies' face is just absolutely priceless.
I'll take care of this one. Well, hello, Hot Pants. I don't suppose you have a driver's license tucked down in there somewhere, do you?
Yes, officer.
But it was a really good twist having a very sexy police officer there as well.
I'd love to know where they get their uniforms from, because no police force that I know has a uniform like that.
Would you wear it if they did?
Yeah, why not?
You'd get people speeding all the time in whatever town you were working in, honestly. You really, really would.
I'd like to say I could pull it off almost like that, yeah.
I love that confidence. I really, really do.
Are you disagreeing?
No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm too scared to disagree. I'm just saying I love that confidence.
Thanks.
No worries. And when Roger Moore is being chased by this police car, it's an absolutely fantastic stunt. When you think there's no special effects in this film, it's all practical stunts. And they've like put the oil out the back, and this police car spins. He must spin in excess of 20 times before it comes off the road. It's a really, really good practical stunt, isn't it?
It is. I was going to ask you if that was all done kind of like remotely or somehow, because I didn't know if they had some sort of effect to do it.
No. But
obviously not. That was actually done. So that was, yeah, then that was very impressive, because they didn't really ever lose. I know they were spinning, but they never really lost control, which is quite good.
No, it was absolutely brilliant. And the theme of kidnapping and the theme of kind of sexual assaults in the 80s. What the fuck? When they show Jackie Chan that he's driving and he puts a porn film on, and the commentary is about a female who's been kidnapped and is going to be raped. That's basically what it is, isn't it? I'll play it.
You are about to witness the ravishment of a woman who has been abducted. A woman whose initial fear has mellowed into curious expectation. In the morning, she will be set free, unaware of anything, except that she has been loved as never before.
Yes, it is. And I didn't really understand that at all, or why, what the reference was for. Again, kind of like the softer scene, I don't really understand it.
No, it's
fucked up. Missing the point. I'm totally missing the point.
Yeah, if he was just watching women in shower videos of boobs and stuff, you'd think, yeah, that's titillation, that's great. But to show that particular film as a porno, it's just like, what the fuck is this? It's a bizarre choice. Mm. I really, really don't get it.
I think it's completely out of place and changes the tone of the whole film.
Yeah, it makes Jackie Chan look really fucking seedy. And I still don't understand why they chose. They got the rocket system in the back of their car, and for some reason that they end up on this kind of desert dune buggy race, and they get stuck, and they've got this rocket system taken from like Concorde, and they fly through the air. Again, I know it's based on kind of like wacky racers, but it's a very, very bizarre choice, isn't it?
It is, and I struggled. There were parts of this film that were funny, but I struggled with it right from the start because I didn't really see the point to it at all. And I know there's not really a point to films, I understand that, but there's just no point to any of it. There's no real story, there's no real anything, and that to me, like you're saying, is completely out of place. It's so out there, it's so I don't know, it just doesn't go with anything else. I just didn't get it. I struggled with that to try and work out why that's there or why they've said that or why they've done certain things, and this was one of them.
But a lot of this film, and again, when you watch it, it's like under a critical eye like we do, doesn't go together, but for some reason it fits in. It's almost as if like Hal Needham was like, I've got an idea. One of the cars have a rocket thing. Let's just see how that looks and just smash it in there. And that's what the critics said about this film, that it's got so many stars in, but it kind of doesn't have any substance whatsoever.
No.
It's there's no direction. It's based on racing from A to B. And in the middle, it's just like, let's give each star a little bit to do, which doesn't really fit together like a jigsaw. And it's all kind of independent. The only time they're really working together is when one of the roads are blocked and you get the fight scene against the bikers when I think it's Brad turns up. He turns up on his motorbike and all the other bikers surround him. And then because they kick off, I like the fact that all the cannonballers just join in and have a fight. And that's pretty entertaining. It's the only time actually getting together and working together. And that's when Jackie Chan kind of steals the show with his martial arts, doesn't he?
He does. I think Jackie Chan in that is actually quite good. I find him quite entertaining. But I also find how he becomes an amazing fighter, I don't know why, but I like Captain Chaos in that as well. I think he's quite good.
Yeah, he is good. And it's very bizarre how he is just rock solid. So when you look at Jackie Chan on the build-up to this, which is his breakthrough over in the West, he is Drunken Master. Drunken Master's like a style that he's famous for because it's kind of all over the place where there's no actual style to his martial arts. It's really unpredictable. And he did that in 1978, really famous film. It's like a cult film. It's a spiritual kung fu, Dragon Fist, Young Master. And then he did Cannonball Run. And after that, he did Project A. There's just so many famous films. And he's actually in Cannonball Run 2, which is in 1984. And after that, you've got Police Story, which is a classic film in 85. Then Armor of God. And then there was no stopping him. His martial arts, he did his own stunts. You can look on YouTube of his injuries that he got. And he always shows you of a lot of his films, if you ever watched them, Kel, that when he got hurt, performing his stunts at the end of his films, and it's really amazing because some of the things he does are just like they blow your mind, and the injuries he gets is just incredible. So if you ever see a Jackie Chan film on, like an old school one, and it's close to the end, it's well worth watching for the stunts because he is famous, yeah, for doing that. And yeah, it's impressive. And Captain Chaos, as you say, beats the shit out of loads of people. Yeah. And it's great when Dean Martin is getting choked and then the doctor turns up and injects the geezer.
Stabs him. Yeah, it's brilliant. It is, because that comes in handy then. His weird creepiness from out the film has actually come in quite handy. So I think it's good.
It does, but then Dean Martin says to Jack Earl, have you ever drunk that stuff? And he sprays that syringe in his mouth.
It is good.
It's just so fucking funny. It really is. And then the road opens and then they're off again. And they're just so close to the finishing line and they're getting overtaken by everyone. And again, you suspend all kind of disbelief. Naturally, they're going to get overtaken by the Ferrari, naturally by the Lamborghini. And then Captain Chaos starts driving. And for some reason, the ambulance then becomes like a fucking super vehicle and overtakes everyone.
He has magic powers, apparently. That's how he becomes this amazing fighter. He's obviously got some turbo power box or whatever in his trousers as well.
So, oh my God, I can't leave that comment.
Oh, you can leave that comment. Just carry on.
No, he's got some kind of turbo box in his trousers. Amazing. That's so good. Okay, I'll leave that one out there. And then they get to the pier, and then it's literally a race, a foot chase, to stamp their ticket, because they stamped one at the start, they have to stamp it at the end, and then they'll win the Cannonball one. And Captain Chaos is running, and surely you think there is no stopping him. He can drive fast, he can fight, can run fast. And then this lady shouts out about rescuing my baby, and he just detours and does that, and of course he would. And it's so, it's just tropey and childish, isn't it?
It is, but there's two things. I love the fact that her baby is a dog. That's fantastic. I love it. But also, why does nobody else stamp their ticket? Because they didn't all start at the same time. So surely the people that stamped it haven't won.
I completely agree. Yeah, I was just going to say, talk about that. You're right. They start in like 5 minute intervals, don't they? And they all finish together. So, yeah, surely if it's based on time, that there is a chance for someone else to win. But it is Adrian Barbeau, who plays Marcy, who stamps that ticket and wins. And it's a strange scene. And the outtakes kind of explain it, that they just laughed so much. It got on Hal Needham's tits much.
Yeah, he comes in, doesn't he, at the end, and just like, no, that's it, we're done.
Yeah. Because it just can't. And this scene was done again and again and again because they kept getting it wrong. And you can see that where Dom is just trying to be Captain Chaos and Burt Reynolds is just laughing. And even when he slaps him, they still piss themselves laughing after. And you can see people in the background smiling because they must have done this take fucking so many times.
But I'd love to be part of a film for that moments like that where you just get the giggles and it's just funny because it just looks so like, I mean, it must obviously be hard work, but it also looks like so much fun because you're just having a complete piss take out of each other.
Yeah. And it looks like genuine laughter as well. It's not just staged. Mm. It just looks great fun. And again, you've got the famous injector seat where Roger Moore gives Voight a cigar. And he sits in the driver's seat. Obviously, the driver's seat doesn't eject. And he presses the button. And Roger Moore, surely someone as cool as Roger Moore would not fall for his own tricks, would he?
Well, clearly he did.
It's bad. There is no way on earth that Roger Moore, fucking at his age of doing this, was shot out of his seat and landed in the harbour. There is no chance.
You don't think? You think he used a body double for that, do you?
I'm pretty confident that they did use a body double for that. But then the film ends. There's no mention of the money. They're all friends. It just pans out. And then it goes to the outtakes at the end, which is the first time a film had actually done this. And it is, as you said earlier, it's lovely to see these actors just having fun, genuinely laughing. And these things kind of always make you smile, don't they?
I think it's brilliant. I quite often prefer the bits at the end and the outtakes to the actual film, because you do see the people having like genuine fun and how they get on as people rather than just the characters.
Yeah. And it makes them more human. You forget that Burt Reynolds got paid $5 million to do this. When you see him laughing and having fun, you kind of think, yeah, fair enough. Like, give him more money. He's absolutely great.
I don't know about that. Does he need more, really? He could just do this one film and never work again.
Well, yeah, I kind of, some of the films he did, I wish that was the case, but no. But he did do Boogie Nights, which is amazing. So if you ever get the chance to watch Boogie Nights, that is such a good film. Definitely recommend
I'll
take
that. Your word for that.
You'd like that. It's Mark Wahlberg. He's Dirk Diggler, the porn star. And it's a brilliant film. Really good fun. Cannonball Run. Carol, talk to me. 1981. Has it outdated? Can you leave it behind? Or is it something that you actually enjoyed?
So I could definitely leave it behind, I'm afraid. It's not a bad film. It is quite funny. But I just don't see the point in it. It doesn't link. The characters don't link. The stories don't link. Yeah, like you said, it's a race from beginning to end. But the bit in the middle just makes no sense. So I found it a bit of a nothing film. It was all right. And I wouldn't say don't watch it, but at the same time, I wouldn't go out of my way to recommend it to someone.
I was going to say that. Is this a film that you possibly could recommend to people? But I take it, did you hate it that much?
I don't, like I say, I don't hate it. It was all right, but it wasn't. There's a lot more things I'd rather do in an hour and a half of my time than sit and watch Cannibal Run. So I don't really want to watch Cannibal Run 2. It's not made me think, oh yeah, let's see what happens in the next one. Because I imagine it's the same race with random bits in the middle just the same. So, no, it was, I wouldn't give it a high score. It's not for me.
What's it going to have then?
Maybe a one.
Wow. Damn, it could be friction in your house tonight when your other half finds out that you scored this one.
He won't know. He doesn't listen, so it's fine. He never listens to me, so no change yeah,
it's,
there.
That's understandable. But I would disagree, and I think this film means more to people of my age who's loves the 80s, and I've always said if I was stuck on a desert island, I would take films from the 80s, music from the 80s, because it was just the best era going, and it produced some of the best films in the world.
The 80s produced some of the best people.
Oh, I'll disagree with that, because I know where you're going with that. But this is brilliant. I mean, this film just is a lot of fun. It has absolutely no story to it, but it's a film you can just sit and watch and enjoy and have fun to. You can't take it serious. And we watch it under a critical eye and you do question all these things. But it's, for me, it's lovely to, and the pass it gets is that it's got people like Burt Reynolds. It's got people like Roger Moore. It's got Dean Martin. Famous people like that. And it works also for me because of the chemistry between a lot of the characters. I mean, Burt Reynolds is really good friends with Dom DeLuise. They're both very good friends. So the connection on screen is absolutely brilliant. It goes without saying, the Rat Pack, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. Massive. And again, it's kind of nostalgia when you look at Adrian Barbeau, who's absolutely stunning back in the 80s. And you can just sit and reminisce and go, yeah, I remember. She was beautiful. And the Lamborghini, when it first hit the streets, wow, an iconic car. So on nostalgia, this film will score like 2.5, I'd say. Because it's not a great story. It is good fun. And I'd recommend it with the caveat of, if you're not born in that era, you probably will get bored and look at it. And halfway through, probably 20 minutes into it, think, why am I watching this? But it's for people of my age. If you're born in the 70s, then you'll love this film. And that probably goes for your husband, doesn't it? As why he likes it too much. Why he likes it so much.
Are you saying old people will like it?
To be honest, yeah. I really think they will. I think it'll be uninteresting and outdated for people of a certain age who don't see the point of what's actually happening, who don't appreciate Burt Reynolds, don't appreciate Jack Elam or the Rat Pack or know what they are. So I think it is lost, and I don't mean that insulted, on a certain generation. I think my generation likes it.
I would agree with that, because there's a lot of references and stuff that I've had to look for this. I've had to look at it to understand it, which as a standard viewer, I wouldn't do. So yes, it probably reaches its peak to a certain age limit, and then after that it's not that funny. So yeah, I would get, if you're old like you, then yeah, I'd say you probably find it more entertaining than if you're young and youthful like me.
Oh my god, I didn't say that as an avenue for you to compliment yourself on how old you are and being
nobody
youthful.
Else is gonna fucking compliment me, so I gotta do it myself.
Too right, okay, because you're stuck with me on this podcast, so you're not gonna get any of that.
Well, there you go then, I've done it myself. Like
good
most
for
things.
You. But that is Cannibal Run. We won't be doing Cannibal Run 2, so you don't have to worry. But this was done. Could your other half recommended it? Hope if he does listen to this that he enjoys it, and he might agree with our scores. He won't agree with yours, he could agree with mine, or might not even think that I scored it high enough. But it's a good film, and if you haven't seen it, then you've wasted the whole thing, because we've spoken about it and we've ruined it for you. So I hope you enjoy that. So join us next week where we will be doing The Black Phone, made in 2022, starring Ethan Hawke. And that's a really good horror film. So that's currently showing in the UK. I don't know where you are listening to this, on Netflix. So join us next week. We'll have a nice bit of horror and suspense and supernatural. And it's a film that you've not seen, Cal, is it?
I haven't seen it, but I have wanted to see it. So hopefully it won't be a waste of my hour and a half.
I can promise you it's not. And if you don't score this 2.5 or above, because I know you're so tight on your scoring, I'll be really disappointed. It's a creepy supernatural film. Ethan Hawke is very, very good as a sinister baddie in this. He's brilliant. So that's not a spoiler, because you obviously know who he is.
Yes. I have excellent. That much of a knowledge.
I can't wait to hear what you're going to say. I'm really, really pleased. You've chosen that film. You put yourself out there. You wanted to do The Black Phone. You could redeem yourself from Chucky.
Dangerous. It is dangerous. The last film I chose was Chucky. So if it's anything like that, then I apologise in advance.
Well, I saw this at the cinema and I really, really enjoyed it. I watched it on my behalf and we both were just really impressed, and it was fucking creepy. So you'll definitely like it.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Brilliant. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for streaming. The figures are just mind-blowingly good. I don't know why people want to listen to what we've got to say, because it's nonsense most of the time, but they are obviously as mad as we are, or just desperate as we are. But we really appreciate your support. We are all absolutely amazing. And whatever you're doing when you're listening to this, have a great day, look after yourselves, and we'll be back next week. All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience. And any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.